championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Bazer. I'm joined alongside, as always, by Darius Terrell. You guys listen to the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel, anywhere you guys can find a podcast. It's OU Hate Week, y'all. You know what time it is. This week, we're going to go ahead and talk about West Virginia a little bit, give our overall take on the game, talk about that offense and the sluggish start, talk about the defense and the up-and-down game they have, then really dive into this OU Texas game. It's one of the highest ranked games for both teams since 2008. It is a big weekend for the Longhorns as they face the much hated Sooners. So let's go ahead and dive into the show. Darius, let's get into the other quote unquote rivalry game. Am I right? With the Mountaineers, Texas didn't have a great start to this game, but they kind of got it together towards the end. What is your overall take on the game? What parts really spoke the loudest to you?
I think parts. First of all, it was the road win up in Morgantown, West Virginia. That's a really tough place to play. They fancy themselves as one of Texas's rivals. You know, it's their biggest game of the year coming in. It's their Super Bowl. It's their national championship. And that was a really tough place to play. And Texas didn't, you know, they didn't play their best game. You know, again, I think we've said this a lot lately, but in years past, that probably would have been a loss, you know. And but you had guys step up in that secondary, that young guys that we necessarily hadn't seen do things like that. Deshaun Jameson, I think Anthony Cook played a solid game. You saw a lot of positives. Even though Texas didn't play their best game, there were still a lot of good things to glean from it. And at the end of the day, it was a W on the road against a conference opponent that would love nothing better than to beat you. So at the end of the day, you have to be happy with it, even if you weren't super enthused by the final score.
Right. I think it left a lot of Longhorn fans wanting, because this offense really did have probably one of their worst games, at least a very mediocre game for this Longhorn offense, which was still, you know, a 42-point effort. But really, the offense in the first three quarters, or at least the first and third quarter, has some rough starts. And I think a lot of it can really be blamed on sloppy plays like penalties. 10 penalties and 89 yards worth of penalties is the most this season. Really, the biggest thing I can think of and the biggest reason I can think of is whether or not the coaches want to talk about it, the fans want to talk about it. I do think the team was peeking ahead a bit in this game to the next week. And I think Oklahoma was doing the exact same thing with Kansas, where both of these teams were saying, okay, these teams are not doing their best right now, and we have one of the biggest games of the year coming up in the next week. I think the coaches are looking ahead a little bit. I think the players are looking ahead a little bit. I don't think they'll ever tell you that to your face or to the media or anybody, but that's the God to honest truth. That's just what was happening. And so they came in sleepwalking into an environment where they got slapped in the face by a team that wanted to play them and wanted to beat them really badly. It's like A&M or Texas Tech or TCU, where you're their rival, but to you, they're just another Big 12 team. So Texas got slapped in the face in a away game and came away winning it. But you can't have that against Oklahoma, especially that third quarter. That third quarter was just atrocious. And you go into it having scored twice, going to the half with the lead. You have a chance to put this game away, and instead you go 49 yards with an interception. It's 2 yards per play in that third quarter. That is unacceptable. You cannot do that in the Red River Shootout. One thing that we did see from this offense is just how deadly they are in the red zone and on third down. 16 touchdowns on 18 red zone visits is pretty darn crazy. And those two missed touchdowns were the two ones that Texas missed against LSU that cost them the game. So beyond LSU, they have just been dominant in the red zone. And on third down right now, they are second in the nation to, you guessed it, LSU, with a 56.58 conversion rate right now. They are converting, you know, flip a coin, and Texas is converting better than that. So the Longhorns are doing pretty well, and that's on large part due to Sam Ehlinger, who, honestly, in this game, had a pretty difficult game. You know, he had some good reads where he worked through three or four different reads, or he made throws to gut. You know, Devin Duvernay, the one on the sideline where Devin Duvernay made an incredible snag, or the ones where he threw it to the sideline in between three guys, Devin Duvernay and another one to Cade Brewer. But on the other end, he missed reads, like the one at the beginning of the second quarter where if he waits just a second longer, he'll find Devin Duvernay coming open to convert a long third down and maybe even more, or just a poor underthrown ball to John Burt and also another one to Brennan Eagles, which Brennan Eagles stopped from being picked. But the John Burt one was picked. It was just a bad throw. Darius, you know, with all of this being said, he had four touchdowns. Are you happy with this game from Sam Ehlinger?
I feel like you have to be happy because, again, you came away with a win, a road win in conference. But if you watch the game, I mean, to the naked eye and the numbers back it up, this was Sam Ehlinger statistically. I mean, period. This was his worst performance so far this season. He completed 54% of his passes. Of course, it was less than 50% in the second half. Like you said, he had a season low 211 yards through the air. And he posted a season low QBR of 75.2. Okay. His second lowest to that point was the LSU game, and it was 83.6. That's a big difference. This past week against West Virginia, it was the first time this season where we saw a team refuse to give up the slants to Texas. I think that threw Ehlinger off a little bit, and he struggled to adjust when Devin Duvernay was taken away from him. We saw some issues, maybe not arm strength, but maybe mechanic and footwork issues as he short hopped two different deep comebacks during the game, one to Malcolm Epps and one to Brandon Eagles, both on third downs, and he was trying to find other options. And unfortunately, I think some things were put on tape that Oklahoma saw, and we'll see again this upcoming weekend when the Longhorns and Sooners face off. But this was his worst game of the season, yet still, if you take away a garbage touchdown at the end, Texas still covers the spread and wins by almost three touchdowns in Morgantown. And I'm betting he'll bounce back this weekend and have one of those performances like he did this time last year.
Oh, I'm sure he will. But what happened was, and a lot of the struggles, especially in the run game and in the pass game, were the offensive line struggles against, you know, Darius Stills and Dante Stills. I mean, those two guys may be some of the best, if not the best, defensive linemen in the Big 12. They're incredibly explosive. They're something special, and I think Longhorn fans and, you know, Longhorn media and the Longhorns underestimated them. Sam Ehlinger seemed surprised at times about how fast Darius Stills was able to get into the backfield, and he just, Darius Stills, I mean, just ate Junior Anguilau and Derek Kerstetter's lunch, dinner, and midnight snacks, man. It was just, he was there eating everything up, and you know, for one sack and three tackles for losses, and also Zach Shackelford's had better games. It's just so fast that they really couldn't get to him on reach blocks. But the second thing I think really what that became apparent this game was how underrated Colin Johnson is for this Texas offense. In the first half, Sam Ehlinger goes 13 of 21 and 176 yards for two touchdowns. And that was when West Virginia was giving Devin Duvernay space and time. The second half, they got wise to it and started to really choke down on Devin Duvernay. In response to this, Sam Ehlinger goes 5 of 12 for 35 yards and one interception. And it's not like he's not trying to hit other guys.
Right.
But the fact is that guys like Brennan Eagles are a lot more effective when they're not the center of attention.
Right.
It's Brennan Eagles, I guess, is not ready yet to be the number one guy or the number two guy. And that's all right for where he is. But with Colin Johnson, Sam Ehlinger has an outlet, another outlet that defenses have to account for, where if you decide to take away Devin Duvernay, you leave an open Colin Johnson and vice versa.
Yeah, you have to pick your poison.
Exactly. So that was a big tell in that game from that offense. And beyond that, I mean, the running backs, I mean, Darius, who's your starting running back on this team?
I mean, I don't see any reason not to start Keontae Ingram, but I mean, if he's banged up, if he's not performing, I don't see any reason they couldn't go like this past weekend. If Roschon Johnson's hot, you ride the hot hand. That's what you do. That's why you recruit. That's why you bring these guys in here. You have options to choose from. It's the University of Texas. So roll with the hot hand.
Yeah, I think he gets down on himself very easily, but if it weren't for that, I think Roschon Johnson might start working his way into the first team. And also, how about Kirk Johnson getting some reps in there, man? The guy who I never thought I'd ever see on the field again looked hungry.
No, he looked good. He only got two carries, but he did look juiced up. He looked quick. He looked twitchy. If Kirk Johnson can come back, not even play a big role, but if Kirk Johnson can come back and give Texas a series every game and contribute on special teams, man, I think you got to consider that found money for the Longhorns and a huge, just another chapter in his success story. But it was definitely good to see him out there.
And we also saw this in the spring game, but Jared Wiley was used a lot in this game and was a very solid blocker. So that is some good news going to Dallas. But honestly, this offensive performance, while not terrible, I mean, you still got 42 points out of it, is not gonna cut it in Dallas.
Right.
Not gonna cut it in Dallas. But this defense might. You know, this was kind of the perfect week for these defensive backs to have a West Virginia game. You know, overall, it was a pretty good effort against West Virginia. They're not the best team, but it really helped out that the Longhorns, in some tough situations, were good in the red zone and really getting some key stops and turnovers throughout this game.
Yeah, as we've seen them do a few times this season, going back to the Oklahoma State game, when Texas found themselves in trouble, the defense finds a way to bow up, prevent touchdowns, and allow field goals, or even in some instances this past weekend, come up with turnovers. And what that does is it swings momentum back. And it was really good to see the defense be able to pick up the offense when the offense was down, when for seemingly most of this season it's been the offense, you know, dragging the defense with them. But the effort, again, Texas, you never have to worry about Texas playing hard or playing physical. But it was towards the end of that game during the fourth quarter, Texas did look like the stronger, the more physical team, and they were imposing their will on them.
Right, right. And it was really nice to see that these defensive backs had, you know, a decent game. You know, it was kind of in between a good and a bad game, where players like B.J. Foster, Deshaun Jameson, Anthony Cook all had their mess-ups here and there. But on the other end, you saw flashes of greatness. Deshaun Jameson's one-handed interception might be one of the best interceptions I've seen ever in Texas football history. I mean, you know, in terms of talent.
Yeah, it was freaky.
Yeah, and Brandon Jones, also on the other side, you know, as a senior on the other end there, that dude just showed again how much of a distance eater he is. I mean, that dude just wipes out distance between himself and the runner like a whiteboard. It's pretty crazy to see what these defensive backs were able to do in this game, and kind of a nice prep and a nice, honestly, a good confidence boost going into Oklahoma.
I mean, those guys are going to be under the fire. You know, they're going to be under fire. You know, it's, and when you get into that environment, they're not true freshmen, those defensive backs. And they were there last year, but it's a little bit different when you're playing a bigger role out there. It's going to be hard to breathe. It's going to be hard to catch your breath. You're going to see it split down the middle, burn orange and crimson and cream. It's different. It's going to be really interesting to see how they perform and how they respond to everything. But if you go by this past weekend, it is encouraging for what they can do when the ball comes in their area.
But here's the thing, is there were still a lot of gaffes in this game. The Longhorns still gave up just under 500 yards and were saved by really two poor decisions by Austin Kendall and two crazy athletic plays by the Longhorns. I don't know if you can have that type of defensive game and still win against Oklahoma. It's going to be very difficult to do that, but as long as you can get, you know, turnovers like that, then I think there's a chance. But I'm starting to argue with myself, because on the other end, a lot of those yards that the West Virginia got were empty yards, where the Longhorns were able to stop them in the red zone and stop them. You know, they got some big jump plays and then nothing. Or they got plays in garbage time where they got a lot of yards. I mean, Cowboys fans, Darius, I'm about to hit you in the heart here. You guys had 500 yards of offense in that game against Green Bay. Does that mean Green Bay was a bad team? No. They were up 31-3 at one point, but the Cowboys were still somehow able to get 530 yards of offense. That is what you call empty yards. West Virginia had quite a few empty yards against the Longhorns in this game. So, yes, the stats don't look pretty. You can't have a game like that against Oklahoma, but it's still a better game than what it looked like for the defense, especially given all the defensive stops in the red zone. Okay, let's go ahead and switch gears here. But before we do that, I have to tell y'all about my guys over at LastStandHats.com. Y'all already know LastStandHats.com. If you've been listening to the show, they've been helping us out over here, getting the shows sponsored by being very generous. And not only that, they have wonderful products over there that I support as well. They're great for Longhorn fans. They have great Longhorn gear. They're having new stuff every single week, it seems. And if you guys aren't wearing some gear from LastStandHats.com to Dallas this weekend, you are doing it wrong. To get that gear, go to LastStandHats.com and use our promo code HORNSCAST10 to get 10% off anything from the store. So go ahead, wear your heart on your head, and go to the number one place for real Texas fans to get their game day gear. Now let's go ahead and get on to what really we've been kind of talking about, kind of off to the side here, offhandedly, the Oklahoma game, the Red River Shootout. Darius, you have played in this game. You have been in this game. What is it like as a player to walk into that stadium or just walk into the fairgrounds? So get into the fairgrounds early in the morning and walk into that stadium. You know, walk me through, what was your first experience as a Longhorn walking into the fairgrounds?
There's no other game, nothing, no other experience that you'll play in wearing a Texas uniform. Even with them having a Big 12 championship game now and them playing, you know, more than once in the season, likely, there's no other environment like that Cotton Bowl environment. Even though it's an 11 o'clock kickoff, you're up at 6 o'clock, 6:30, breakfast at 7, heading to the fairgrounds at around 8, 8:30. Even that early in the morning, you've got thousands of folks out there lining around. You see the barbecues going, folks tailgating, kids from ages, you know, 3 months all the way to adults age 80 are out there lined up, screaming back and forth at each other, Texas fight, Boomer Sooner, you know, Texas sucks, Oklahoma sucks, blah, blah, blah. And when the buses roll through, you know, there are different signs held up. There are people saying things, there are people gesturing, you know, things like that. It's just really different. There's sign language. Yeah, sign language being used. And, no, coming out of that tunnel. So both locker rooms face each other, at the Cotton Bowl in that tunnel. So when you come out, you're looking directly across at each other. Now coming down that tunnel, there's nothing like it. When you come out, it's a white noise, man. And you run out there, you can hear your song at the end. And, you know, from there, I gotta be honest, everything is really a blur. You don't really catch your breath again, man, until probably about halftime. And it's really, really hard to explain. It's one of those environments, one of those moments, one of those experiences where you just have to lose yourself in it. And it's special. It really is.
I'm trying to remember. Did y'all ever win when you were there?
No, not the two times. No.
That was like 63-21.
No, I was not there for that. I don't think. No. The first one was like 40 something. You know what? You might have to look those scores. I really don't remember well.
28-20. 55-17.
No, I wasn't 28-20. Okay, I was there for 55-17, I believe. What was the other one?
63-21.
Oh, my God. Was it 63? I tell you, see, I forgot. I made sure I forgot, man. God, no. Hey, I remember getting to play a lot in them. So, hey, there must have been some blowouts. But no, like I said, it's nothing like it. I actually remember coming out of the tunnel. I think it was that second game because I knew I was going to play. I was a redshirt freshman, so I was able to play. They came out, they're barking at our linemen, you know, I could just see it on guys' face. We were a little bit intimidated going into that game, and it showed on the scoreboard, man. But hey, I was happy to get in. I got to run around on the cotton bowl grass in front of my family and stuff. But hey, I didn't even remember that score. I blocked it out. It'd been blocked out of my memory. Thanks for bringing it back up.
Yeah, no problem, man. No problem.
Jeez. Those were, God, oh, I did not remember those being like that.
But yeah, but you know, hey, it's a new era, new dawn.
It is. Yeah.
Oh, you shook, man. You're shook.
Man, geez, I'm traumatized. I forgot.
Oh man, that's funny. But yeah, it's an interesting game to see, and as from the fan perspective, from the player perspective, there's just nothing like it in the sport of football. You know, maybe the closest thing you have is the biggest cocktail party, whatever it's called. But even then, that's a secondary rival for both those schools. This is your primary rival, and there is just bad blood. So, you know, going into this game, what are your thoughts on Oklahoma?
Oh, I mean, obviously Oklahoma's undefeated. You've heard everything about the offense. You've seen the numbers. But I can't stress this enough going into a game like this, a rivalry game, man, you can pretty much throw any kind of numbers out the window. I don't even remember the first score, the first Cotton Bowl, last year, but, I'm pretty sure Texas held Oklahoma way below their averages. And I'm pretty sure that Sam Ellinger outdoed Kyler Murray, and who would have thought that? So I think you can throw all the stats from previous games out the window coming into this game.
Absolutely.
I think if Keandre Coburn can command a legitimate double team, that'll go a long ways in Texas having some success in slowing Oklahoma down offensively. I think it's going to take another one of those performances from Sam Ellinger, like we saw a year ago. It's going to take something special because, I mean, Oklahoma's not they're a double digit favorite for a reason. But Tom Herman has proven time and time again that his teams are going to show up for big games. Texas is the type of team that's going to hit you in the mouth. And, I mean, let's be honest, we haven't seen Oklahoma get hit in the mouth this season. And last year, they didn't respond very well to it. Okay?
No.
So,
no, not at all. Yeah, that was going to be my point, was that Oklahoma, they're 5-0, mm-hmm. probably the best team they've played, or the best teams they've played are UCLA and Texas Tech. Beyond mm-hmm. that, I think they have played – who have they played? I mean, exactly. They've played South Dakota, Houston, Kansas last week.
Yeah,
yeah. They haven't got hit in the mouth. Texas has gotten hit in the mouth by LSU. Texas has taken their blow. They've taken their lick. They've already faced the number one offense in the nation, or maybe the number two, and then now they're facing another top offense in Oklahoma. So they've already seen a high powered offense. Yeah. Now they're seeing one that actually kind of plays into their wheelhouse.
Well, that's not getting talked about enough. They have already faced an offense that statistically is just as good, or if not better. That's not getting talked about enough.
Exactly. So they face a team that is as good, if not better, than Oklahoma. Now, but Oklahoma has not faced a team anywhere near the talent level. You know, not just saying, hey, the coaching or whatever, the talent level, the number of recruiting stars as the Longhorns have. This is going to be an interesting test for the Oklahoma Sooners in this new Alex Grinch defense, this Jalen Hurts experiment, the troubled offensive line who could potentially be missing two offensive tackles. It's going to be an interesting game for the Oklahoma Sooners where I think they find out really what is this team made of, and I think for the same thing for the Longhorns. Can we hang with the big teams, or are we just going to be a step below them, right? Can we, you know, be a top 10 team, or are we, you know, maybe it's a top 25, right?
This game goes, it means everything as far as any playoff dreams, any playoff hopes. They got to win this game, right? But, I mean, as far as the good news about it is, or bad news, depending on how you look at it, it either way, it's not the end of the world as far as their Big 12 aspirations still. Mm-hmm. But as far as any national hopes, this game that they have to have it on Saturday.
Right, right. So let's go ahead and get into the keys of the game before we jump on with JY from the Oklahoma side of the football, Brainiacs. Darius, what is your first key to the game? It seems like you said Keandre Coburn becoming that two-man wrecking ball up the middle.
Coburn has to, it can't be a double team where, okay, the center gets a piece with the guard and then he's off to go get, you know, go get a cover up the mic or the wheel. He's got to command a legitimate double team that frees up one of those backers in order for Texas, because if Texas can't get pressure along with their front three or front four, because they'll bring a fourth guy, if they have to blitz, even though Oklahoma maybe hasn't, you know, seen an attack type style like Texas is, if they have to bring a blitz, it's going to expose parts in that secondary. I mean, it's just the wrong staff. It's the wrong coach. Lincoln Riley is the wrong coach to be doing that again.
Yeah.
We've seen Texas try that approach against, you know, towards the end of the game with LSU, bringing pressure, and it didn't work out well for them. If Keandre Coburn can be a presence in the middle like he was last week, that helps Texas chances exponentially, in my opinion.
Right. If he can take Creed Humphrey and then somebody else out of the game, then that will go, you know, light years for the Longhorns. On top of that, getting pressure on the quarterback has really been a problem this year for the Longhorns, as you kind of pointed out. The West Virginia game was an exception. There were times where Austin Kendall had 4 seconds, if not more, in the pocket, because Texas is bringing, you know, three guys and a safety from 6 yards out. There's nowhere that he's ever going to get there. But I think this game, you're going to be seeing a lot more pressure on Jalen Hurts, probably more so of a containment type of pressure, which is not Todd Orlando's strong suit, but still, a lot more pressure. And I think while, yes, the defensive line is going to be important, I think the offensive line is also just as important. We saw them have some trouble against Darius Stills and Dante Stills. Now they're going to be going up against Ronnie Perkins and Neville Gallimore. Let's see if Sam Cosmi and that offensive line can live up to their words of saying these guys, yeah, they're good, but they're not special. Did West Virginia expose something where teams are now going to start attacking the right side of that offensive line? Or can these Longhorns bounce back and take on these two guys?
Darius Stills is going to be, he's the best lineman that I've seen so far. He's the best lineman that Texas will see the rest of the regular season. They're not going to see another guy that's that twitchy, that quick, okay, and has those heavy hands like that. Neville Gallimore is a good player. He's not as explosive as a guy like Darius Stills, okay? Ronnie Perkins is another good player, but he's going to be lining up over on Sam Cosmi's side, okay? And Sam Cosmi locked up
Kalavon Chason,
a better player than Ronnie Perkins and Kalavon Chason. So we saw Texas get offensive line get hit in the mouth a little bit last week. I think they're going to come out firing on this Saturday, and I really think Texas is not going to have any kind of problem. I really think they won't have a problem moving the ball, whether that be through the air or on the ground.
And the reason I'm saying this is so important is because Texas needs to control the run game, whether that's on the defensive side or the offensive side. They need to be able to control the run game, and especially on the offensive side, because they need to keep the ball out of that Oklahoma offense's hands. I mean, that's just kind of been the formula every single year since 2008. Where Oklahoma has just had these prolific offenses. Keep the ball out of the hands of that offense. How are you going to do that? By having the sustained drives that Tom Herman had. That's why he's been so successful against Oklahoma, is because he's able to keep the ball out of the hands with his offense. So getting an offensive line, be able to respond and step up and smack the Oklahoma defensive line in the mouth, is going to be incredibly important for the Longhorns to win this game. Darius, what's your next key?
My next key, I believe, will be, and I think you're going to hit on it later, but winning the turnover battle is extremely important. I don't think you can ask for 4 turnovers like you got last week from West Virginia. But if Texas can win the turnover battle, be +1 or +2, I think that'll also go a long ways as far as them having a better chance of winning this one.
Right. Tom Herman talked about this in his press conference, where he is 13-2 when they win the turnover battle. Tom Herman, and I believe in this game, over the past few years, the team that has looked the best has been the one that wins the turnover battle. So if the Longhorns can win this turnover battle against the Sooners, then that's, again, recipe for success for the Longhorns. Whenever you can keep the ball away from the Sooners or get a drive that ends without a touchdown, that is more than a win for the Longhorns defense. hence why the turnovers are so important. The next key I have for the Longhorns game is sure tackling. And I really don't have to explain why this is important. But the Longhorns, for the past few games, have been really keen on death shots. We've seen it with Chris Brown. We've seen it with B.J. Foster. We've seen it with Brandon Jones, with the cornerbacks. They're not so much keen on hitting the guy as they are, or really wrapping up and waiting for another guy to come and finish the job, as they are with trying to take them out in a single blow. And you can't have that against CeeDee Lamb. Well, we saw that happen with Texas Tech against CeeDee Lamb, and CeeDee Lamb had multiple over 50-yard touchdown run pass catches where he caught it 20, ran through a few tackles, and then just went on. That dude's really, really good. You cannot miss tackles against him, or you're going to be punished severely. The Longhorns cannot have what they did against Oklahoma State, West Virginia, and definitely not LSU.
No doubt about it. The sure tackling, I mean, you can harp on it. We can talk about it. We can, you know, we bring it up seemingly every week. But honestly, as a coach, I mean, you can't, you know, this point in the season, you know, this far along with the injuries they have, they can't. I mean, how much tackling can you work on? Can you do? You know, it's just one of those situations where you have to hope for the best. But yeah, Oklahoma's got some guys that when they get the ball and they're going to get the ball in space Saturday. I mean, everybody Texas has played against has had space against them. When they get the ball out in space, they're scary. And if the Longhorns do not get these guys to the ground the first time, okay, not the second time, third, fourth guy to try, the first time, it's going to be a tough game.
Right. So let's go ahead and learn about the Sooners a little bit more and bring on our dude from the other side of the river, J.Y., or Jason, from the Oklahoma Football Brainiacs. J.Y., how are you doing up there in Kansas City? Probably a nice time to be a Chiefs fan these days.
No, man, I grew up a Cowboys fan because I was born in Irving, actually.
You and Darius can mourn on that one for a little bit.
Yeah, man. But my wife and her family are diehard Chiefs fans, so it's a little tough around the Ponderosa right now, man. They're licking their wounds a little bit.
So, J.Y., let's go ahead and get into this because people are here for the Texas and OU game. And this year's Oklahoma, it really doesn't seem all that different from Oklahoma's in the past. What are your impressions so far of this Sooners team, and really, what is the difference? What are the biggest changes so far, and what makes this year different than last?
Well, you know, with Jalen Hurts running the team, I mean, he's bringing a mental toughness and that Alabama culture that probably hasn't been around Norman, especially on the defensive side of the ball. You know, his leadership just trickles into the whole team. I think that he's hard on guys. He knows them. He's a great leader. And I think, you know, I was thinking this the other day, I think that the offense would probably have been more productive last year with him running it than Kyler Murray, even though Kyler was such a prolific quarterback, just from the simple fact that he's such a prolific runner and they're not afraid of him getting hurt like they would Kyler. You know, Kyler's electric, but Jalen is just he's a big guy and he's gotten so much better throwing the football. And on the defensive side of the ball, finally, as a Sooner fan myself, I'm seeing the defense playing with passion and fire that you haven't seen almost 10 years. So it's you used to almost want to turn off the TV every time the defense got on the field.
Right. And J.Y., we've heard a lot about this defense. You know, what is this defense? You know, what's it called? What about it is different? And, you know, what are your first impressions of it?
Well, the thing that you notice right off the bat is Coach Grinch, he makes it a requirement for guys to hustle and run to the football. They get graded on their effort, and that's the biggest difference I've seen in the first five games this year is plays last year. If, let's say, you know, somebody's running a bubble screen out in the flat and somebody misses a tackle, you know, last year, years past, you'd have guys going down the sideline for, you know, 50, 60, 70 yards, and you're in a dogfight. I think with last year's defense, they probably get beat against Kansas because the offense couldn't get on track. Mm-hmm. Now, the other piece of it is that he makes adjustments in game that Mike Stoops didn't. You know, you had a death of 1,000 cuts against Alabama. They ran that slant until you wanted to vomit, you know, against us. And it just, you know, everybody and their dog can see what's going on, but there were no adjustments. And the other piece of it is there's a lot of reserves and young players getting reps. And so there have been some points got scored against Houston and last week against Kansas and some other folks that, if you leave the starters in, they probably don't score those. But now, midway through the season, these guys have got a bunch of reps. So if something happens in the game, they can pull them in and hopefully have those guys be productive and not be lost.
So in a more of an X's and O's way, what is this defense? I know it's more of a 3-4 defense, but really, what is the main difference that Longhorns are going to see in it?
Well, the difference is last year you had a lot of two gap, especially up front with the nose and some of the stuff you see with a guy like Keandre Coburn for you guys that has he's got the lead in his pencil where he can push guys back and he can control two gaps. Sooners don't have anybody like that on their roster. So now with that one gap scheme, they're going to twist a lot. They're going to stun a lot. They're going to jump in gaps. They're going to be very active. And they're going to try to be disruptive and get upfield. So it's an attacking 3-4, whereas in a traditional 3-4, you've got guys that are going to hit that offensive lineman in front of them, try to hold them up, figure out which gap the ball's going to, then commit to it. And it's a more of a read and react thing, where with this one, they're trying to dictate the tempo to the offense and get them to make mistakes and cause a lot of turnovers.
Who would you say so far, who are the standout players on the team?
Well, I think everything starts and finishes right now with Kenneth Murray. The guy he was the Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year, and I don't think there's anybody in Oklahoma media or fan base has been harder on him than me. But the kid put in his homework over the year. I think that new linebacker coach Odom has really got him going. He's playing at a level that we probably haven't seen at Oklahoma since maybe a Curtis Lofton. You got Neville Gallimore is causing a lot of problems. He's extremely disruptive up front. He's playing like the high rated recruit that we hoped that we would have when he first got him. And there's several young defensive linemen. Nobody knows their names right now, but as time goes on, they're going to get a lot better. You know, like Ronnie Perkins, I think is a great talent up front. And you got, Deshaun White, who's a Texas kid. He's playing really well at the Will linebacker spot. And in the secondary, DeLaron Turner-Yell, I think he had his best game of the year last week at Kansas, and he's really solidified that strong safety spot.
I do have a question about Ronnie Perkins and Neville Gallimore, since you brought them up, because Sam Collins brought them up today in his media availability, saying, I wouldn't say they're super special, but they're good players, solid players, nothing to worry about too much. How much would you agree with him?
Well, you know, I think they got all the talent in the world. And, you know, the old saying goes, don't poke the bear, you know.
Right. I agree.
And honestly, if you need somebody to get you riled up for this game this weekend, then there's something wrong with you anyway.
Right.
But you don't want to give anybody anything extra. I think that both of those guys can be as good as they want to be. I think that Ronnie has got the chance under Coach Grinch's scheme to be a much better player just because he has that elite first step quickness to get down inside. He closes on the zone read like no other. And when they turn him loose and he's able to rush the passer and get on the edge of an offensive lineman, he can be very disruptive if he's not fighting through a double team. So, but Neville Gallimore, he's been a terror all year long. He fights through a lot of double teams. And his quickness is his biggest asset. So, I mean, they're good players, but, you know, I think what Sam was starting as a freshman or redshirt freshman down there. So, I mean, he's a good player in his own right. You know, your offensive line concerns me the most out of that unit that you guys are going to put on the field.
Well, that's an interesting thing that you just brought up, because I want to know where are the weaknesses on this Oklahoma defense that the Texas Longhorns are going to look to exploit.
Well, I think that the corners are a little inconsistent. I think that they would they wouldn't be doing themselves a favor if they didn't try to attack those guys, especially with those trees you got running routes for you at wide receiver. You know, Colin Johnson is gigantic. I think the tight end can give them problems. If you watch the UCLA game, that guy, the big tight end they had, was running down the seam all day long. So I think the tight end, they have trouble covering that. And the other piece of it is they've had a really hard time with the screen game early on, although they did get a little bit better against Texas Tech and got a sack on a screen just because the guys are recognizing the screen game quicker than they were. But they're trying to get upfield so quickly that, you know, I think that they're going to be susceptible possibly to some middle screens, stuff like that, maybe with your tight end, your running back, that type of thing. But, yeah, I think definitely the tight end is going to be something that I look for Brewer to have a big game.
Well, that's the thing. Texas, you said the tight end and the screen game. We haven't seen a lot of screens from Texas so far this season. And then also, you know, they don't really utilize the tight end in the passing game maybe enough, so that will be interesting to see. But transitioning over to the offense, you know, let's start, everything starts at quarterback. Let's talk about Jalen Hurts. Everybody saw him at Alabama the first few years. What has been your impression of Jalen Hurts so far, and how does that compare to what your expectations were going to be of him coming into this season?
Well, I think I was like just about anybody else when – you know, you get Jalen Hurts, you're excited about what he can do in the run game, but you're not really certain about what he can do throwing the football. But definitely going through the spring with Lincoln Riley and working on his fundamentals and things like that, he's throwing the ball much better. Early in the year, I guess it still is early in the year, but definitely in the game 1, game 2, he didn't really have a whole lot of time back there to where he could go through his progressions. And once you got to Texas Tech, he was starting to get – the offensive line was starting to gel a little bit more, and he was able to sit back there and start going through his progressions, and it was something that Riley had him working on, so he's getting a lot better at that. So he's definitely a much more refined passer than he was at Alabama. You know, Lincoln Riley is just a quarterback whisperer, and he's got him going pretty good. We're seeing a lot more quarterback run game, called quarterback run, than you have in the past. And so you see the announcers on the TV talk about, oh, well, he's getting pressure and things like that, but they run a lot of draws with him. They run a lot of quarterback power like you guys used to do with the 18-wheeler when Swoops was down there. And so they do a little bit of that. They run a little just pure option with him. They run some zone read with him. And his leadership is probably his best asset just because he's hard on guys. He's hard on himself, and he gets all over people on the sideline. I mean, he's all over people. I think he really wants that rematch with Alabama in the playoff if he can get it.
Well, you were talking a little bit about him running around the pocket and getting pressure early on in the year, and that probably has something to do with having to replace 4 NFL offensive linemen. You still have Creed Humphrey, but you have to replace those other 4 guys with guys like R.J. Proctor and Adrian Ealy and guys like that. But now you're having to replace both your offensive tackles, who may or may not play in this game, probably going to try their best to be in that game. But as Lincoln Riley said, highly questionable. What is this offensive line right now, and how big is the issue for the Oklahoma Sooners?
I mean, the offensive line really, really struggled against Kansas. Again, that was you had a redshirt freshman starting at right guard, and, you know, he played like a freshman. He's definitely got a lot of talent, and he's a great kid, but he's not there. And you're already the slowest group on the field already, and when you're uncertain of yourself, it's going to make you a step slower. And Bray Walker, the kid I'm talking about, just – he looked like he was lost a couple of times, and he looked like a freshman. And, you know, it was almost like here 2 years ago when you had Kerstetter coming in for you guys, and I think Shackelford was only in his first year, and you had some guys that they were trying to piece together down there. You know, they got better as the year went on. You see that a little bit with the Sooners. I think that when Ealy and Swenson were playing – the starting tackles, they really had their best game against Texas Tech. They really were able to do just about anything they wanted to. And then you get Swenson hurt. I think he's got a MCL thing going on. And you get Ely hurt. I think it's his hand. And so you really hope that Ely's going to be able to play, because now you have your starting right guard that they bumped out to the right tackle spot to take over for Ely. And Proctor, who's like a Swiss Army knife, who's more of a guard than he is a tackle, but he can be serviceable out at the left tackle spot. And that has forced Bill Biedenboe, the offensive line coach for the Sooners, to put Bray Walker in at that right guard spot. And it's really testing their depth right now. So it is my biggest concern going into this matchup this weekend.
The numbers in the running game have been really, really strong this season. You know, surprising to some. Going by the metrics, you know, it's saying it may be the best running game in the nation. Oklahoma's got, by my count, 1, 2, 3 guys over 300 yards so far this season. Kennedy Brooks is over 200. How has Lincoln Riley done this with the running game, and what is the scheme that they're using to get this so much success in the running game?
Well, their bread and butter has always been that counter play. You know, pulling the guard and the tackle around. I think they do a really good job reading that defensive end. It's almost like the guard, when he pulls around, reads that defensive end. If he crashes too hard, he log blocks him and just seals him down inside and lets, you know, a Trey Sermon or Kennedy Brooks get outside. Or if that guy stays outside, then they, you know, try to kick him out and get up inside of it. So they do that a lot. They've been running a lot of zone read with Jalen Hurts, and you see a lot more quarterback run game where they've got elite talent out there at wide receiver and C.D. Lamb, and now Jaden Hazelwood, and you have Trajan Bridges and Charleston Rambo, and you have a wealth of riches there at the wideout spot. So when you spread people out, it just opens up a lot of gaps, and people, they aren't able to commit the 7 and the 8 guys to the line of scrimmage like they were in the past, when the Sooners really didn't have the elite talent at receiver. They're having to put more small guys on the field, and when you got Jalen Hurts as big as he is, letting him run around and break tackles, and he's pretty elusive for his size too. So I think that's a big deal with it, because in the past you wouldn't see a Baker Mayfield or Kyler Murray so much commit and run the ball like what Jalen Hurts is. That's part of their game plan now, where you may have a player or two here or there last year or the year before where they really didn't run quarterback run game a lot.
Right. That Tom Herman said that just like how Texas uses Sam Ehlinger as that extra guy on the field, that's what they have now up in Oklahoma, Jalen Hurts. But on top of this running game, you'll have like 11 bajillion wide receivers at the very least. And I thought I knew all of them, you know, like Jaden Hazelwood, Grant Calcaterra. I'm a big fan of Trajan Bridges, Charleston Rambo, obviously got CeeDee Lamb, but like guys like Braden Willis, Nick Baskin, Lee Morris, Lee Morris, I remember from last year, but all these guys kind of coming out of the woodwork. How is Oklahoma utilizing all of this talent? And honestly, which one is your favorite? There's too many.
Right. Well, I mean, one guy you didn't mention is the Hall kid, the H-back. He's probably been the most productive receiver they got outside of Rambo and CeeDee Lamb. I think my favorite has got to be Grant Calcaterra, just because, you know, the guy catches everything that's thrown to him. They haven't used him a lot. I don't know if they've been trying to lull people to sleep with that, but you know, he hadn't caught a lot of balls this year. And I think last week at Kansas, Jalen Hurts completed passes of something like either 12 or 14 different guys. So he's hitting the open man. He's spreading the ball all across the field. Him and CeeDee Lamb do have a special relationship. I think Lamb's a hell of a lot better than he has been. He's just gotten so much bigger and stronger, breaking tackles, and he looks faster than he was. But he's just spreading the ball around. He's distributing it really well, and if he has time to stand back there and look the defense over, he's going to find the open guy, just like any good quarterback. But, you know, I think, yeah, Calcaterra is probably my favorite guy.
You've talked about the quarterback. We've talked about the running game. We've talked about the receivers. You talked about the offensive line. So out of all of those position groups, which position is the most vulnerable, or do you think Texas can have their most, can have the most success, you know, because they utilize mainly a three down, a three man front. You don't really send a lot of guys to rush the quarterback. So where is the vulnerability in this offense?
It's definitely the offensive line right now. They were starting to come together, you know, but you guys are the best defensive line that the Sooners are going to see, unless they get into the playoffs and they're hit like the Sugar Bowl or something like that. You guys are great up front with Roach and the Coburn kid in the middle. I think that it's funny that we started the show talking about how the Chiefs lost this weekend, because the Colts came in and just gave everybody in the NFL the recipe for how to beat those guys, and they beat them up front. And ironically, you look at that game, and they were down to, like, I think the trainers as far as putting guys into the secondary. But Patrick Mahomes couldn't stand back there and find anybody because his first read was dodging the defensive tackle two steps into his drop. And honestly, my biggest concern is, are they going to have time to throw the football? Because I know if I'm Todd Orlando, I'm bringing heat on Jalen Hurts because I'm not confident that that offensive line can stop it. You know, so, you know, you guys, I think, got everybody back except for Caden Stearns. And so I wouldn't worry too much about you guys in secondary. I wouldn't be shocked to see Texas drop a lot of guys into the secondary and make that offensive line for Oklahoma, you know, put a five-man, six-man box up there and say, all right, here we are, come get us, and see if you can win some matchups up front with those big guys you got on the defensive line.
No, I agree with that. I definitely think Texas is probably going to try to drop back, but I had a vulnerability at the cornerback position more so, but also, yes, because Texas is good against the defense, against the run. Like, their run defense is elite, and it'll be an interesting to watch this top-end run game versus this top-end run defense. And that brings me to this question. Where do you think that the Oklahoma Sooners are going to try to attack this Texas defense, especially if Texas does drop back all of these corners, all of these defensive backs into coverage? Where are the Sooners going to go to try to pick apart Todd Orlando's defense?
I think what they've got to do, I think they've got to try to start off with some screens. I think they've got to get that big front seven moving and try to wear out that defensive line, try to get them going side to side. Do some stuff with the option game to where you're creating double teams to where you're not leaving Creed Humphrey one-on-one with the Coburn kid in the middle. I think you've got to try to generate movement right there and put that plus one advantage running Jalen Hurts. I think that you have to try to run the football, even though we may be down some personnel. And like years past, you know, whoever runs the ball more in this game usually is the one that's going to win. And I think you got to get the ball in your playmaker's hands. I think CeeDee Lamb needs some touches. And I think they're probably going to try to see a lot of stuff off of that option game. If they can have some success there, you know, where you fake that zone read and you see him popping up like Baker Mayfield did against Ohio State and hitting those H-backs and in those seam plays where you're trying to get rid of the ball quick and then they don't take too long to develop. You know, I think that's what you're going to see.
So, Longhorn fans, everything that you just heard is a key for Texas to stop, basically. JY, thank you so much, man, for coming on with us. And again, y'all, this is JY from the Oklahoma Football Brainiacs. JY, where can we find you and your stuff?
Well, we're on thefootballbrainiacs.com, and I'm on Twitter at JYBrainiac. And good luck on Saturday, and thanks for having me on.
Appreciate it, JY.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Derek.
Again, thank you to Jason for hopping on with us. It was awesome to have him. Love talking to him every time I do. Dude knows his X's and O's like the back of his hand. But that's going to be it for us. You guys have been listening to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast and the Football Brainiacs podcast. I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. And my man, DT, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter as well, DTERRELL05, And feel free to add me. Feel free to shoot me a message. Feel free to tell me you don't like what I'm talking about. Tell me you agree with me, whatever you want. I've got nothing better to do than to chat it up with you, so go ahead.
Good stuff. You guys can find us on TexasOutTheFootballBrainiacs.com. Or you guys can find us and our other shows on the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel on any podcasting platform out there. On that note, thank you all for listening, and we'll see you all next week. Hook 'em.